Hey, I'm Jack Abutto with the Fedora marketing team, and I'm here with Jesse Keating. Hey, Jesse.
Hello.
And we're here talking about Fedora 11 today.
All right. So, Jesse, would you mind introducing yourself to the audience and telling them a little bit more about what you do?
Sure. I'm Jesse Keating. I am the release engineer for the Fedora project. I've been working with Fedora since it began and was working with Red Hat Linux before that. I joined Red Hat around the time of Fedora Core 5 to take over the responsibility of release engineering for it. So I've been around for quite a while, and I get to do lots of really cool things with Fedora. I, as a release engineer, get to manage the build process of packages, the feature process as far as getting features approved and getting them built into the distribution, as well as taking the build packages and composing installable releases out of them. There's a fair amount of software development involved in managing the build system and compose tools, as well as project management and people management, in other words, cat herding.
And Jesse, do you want to talk a little bit about some of the tools that you've had the honor to create, stuff such as Pungy that is in wide usage, and what that stuff is sort of good for and what's grown out of that?
Sure. Around Fedora 7, we decided to break the difference between Fedora Core and Fedora Extras. Prior to that, Fedora Core was a set of packages that was maintained within the walls of Red Hat by Red Hat employees and was spun into the Fedora release. Fedora Extras was the official extra repository of packages that people outside of Red Hat could contribute to and maintain and would be available to your Fedora installation. We decided that having two repositories was not a good use of our resources, and having things that were part of the core operating system be behind the walls of Red Hat was also not very good use of our resources. So we moved everything outside to the existing extras infrastructure and created just Fedora. In doing that, we had to come up with a new tool to compose the release. The tool we had been using inside of Red Hat was not properly licensed at all. It just had no license. And it was mostly developed for making Red Hat Enterprise Linux. And the things we had to do to make Fedora out of it were less than savory. So I created a simplistic tool that worked with well-known objects such as a YUM repository to create an installable tree of packages, and from that, a set of ISOs. It uses a lot of the Anaconda tools as they existed. It just simplifies things. It has been used to create the Fedora releases since Fedora 7, and it allows people on their own to create ISO sets very easily from sets of packages, either Fedora packages or otherwise. It led to the creation of Revisor as well, which is a graphical utility that has this basic functionality of Pungy plus a whole lot more functionality that users have requested over time. And Revisor is a good graphical way of accomplishing the same thing.
Yeah, and this is where much of the talk of remixes and respins has come from the tools that you help put together, let people customize the distro and do pretty much whatever it is they want to do with any set of packages from the package set. And so you said, you know, you've been involved in Fedora pretty much since the start. How has the process of, you know, release engineering and putting the release together, how has that changed and kind of evolved over time to where we are today?
In the past, releases were really a black box. The Red Hat developers would work on stuff. There was the development stream called Rawhide, which was the nightly builds of packages that people could consume and get an idea of what's happening. But as far as the features that were being worked on and the graphics, how it would look, how it was put together, all of that was really a black box behind Red Hat. And consumers just got a glimpse of that at the various test releases and the final release. Over the years, we've pushed much of that process out of the black box and into a more clear and transparent program. And the biggest example of that is our feature process. Our feature process allows anybody in the project to propose a feature for a Fedora release. And a feature is essentially something, some change they want to make or some new software they want to bring in that affects a wide number of users or other pieces of software, and is generally something that as a project we would want to advertise that we have done this cool thing. Since anybody can propose a feature, we've attached some requirements to that such that if you're going to propose a feature, you better have somebody lined up to work on the feature and to be able to get the feature done in a reasonable amount of time. This has led to a much better understanding of what's going on in Fedora development over the release cycles. Each new release that we have the feature process in place for, we see more and more features being talked about and advertised and getting the attention of the testers and the greater community, as well as the marketing teams and the press. These types of features and this type of work has always been going on in the Red Hat and Fedora world. It's just that they didn't get picked out and pointed out and talked about. So now we're getting greater visibility into each development cycle, and we're able to better plan our resources around that.
And so we've arrived at 11 releases, which is kind of miraculous, come to think of it. You know, it goes to 11. So right. We finally got there. And you were mentioning the feature process. Do you want to talk to us about some of the upcoming features that users can look forward to in Fedora 11, and some of the highlights of some of those features, whatever, especially the things that you find most interesting?
Sure. 11 is a pretty spectacular number to arrive at. Red Hat Linux petered out at 9. Fedora 1 was, in fact, Red Hat Linux 10, with a whole bunch of names changed. So we played around with the idea of doing something pretty interesting for Fedora 10. In the end, we chickened out and just called it 10. So now we're at 11, and 11 has an interesting characteristic to it as well, that it's been a number of releases since Red Hat Enterprise Linux has done a release. And it doesn't take a whole lot of imagination to realize that either this release or the next Fedora release will likely become the basis of the next Red Hat Enterprise Linux release. And if you look at the feature list for 11, you'll find a whole lot of features that, while not necessarily visible to the end user, are changing some pretty important core parts of the operating system and some of the underlying pieces that we want to see changed for the future.
And those kind of help us build for the future. I just wanted to mention as a note. Is that pretty much on target?
That is pretty on target. There's a lot of things that are going into Fedora 11 that set the stage for more visible changes in Fedora 12 and Fedora 13. But we have to get the underlying things in place and worked out first.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the cool things about 11 that users will notice, our startup process is significantly faster. This is something that we've been working on for a couple of releases, and some really cool tools have surfaced to help us with that. Some things like Bootchart, which will measure each individual process along the way from kernel load to functioning desktop and help you determine where the delays are and help you focus on fixing those. The target for 11 was 20-second startup, and on many systems, you'll actually achieve that time, if not faster. The time really is a bit arbitrary. It's just we give ourselves a cool-sounding number to shoot for, when in reality, we're just taking another swath at the slowdowns and re-engineering things to be faster.
Faster is always better.
Faster is always better. We've made some very significant changes to the installer, in particular the way that the storage code works. The installer storage code, the stuff that actually examines your disks, helps you pick partitions and writes them out, has been largely unchanged at its core level for many, many years. Lots of features have been piled on top of it, but there has been no significant rewrite for quite some time. So our Anaconda team tackled this issue for 11, and they rewrote many parts of it and got rid of a lot of things that were written specifically just for Anaconda and are now using more system-level utilities. Users won't necessarily notice a change here, other than it's a little bit more bug-prone than previous releases, as it is a new rewrite. But it is much easier for our team to fix the bugs that are found and to add new features and functionality in the future, now that they have a more stable base to work with.
Yeah, and it's sort of, it's more systematic as well, which is the good thing from the developer's point of view. So that
right.
That adds a lot to it. That makes it, it makes it very attractive.
Yep. Something users will definitely notice is better PackageKit integration with the desktop. PackageKit is a really neat graphical package management system that was written as part of Free Desktop that is not distribution specific. It's an attempt at creating a distribution agnostic and package management agnostic graphical utility for managing software in a Linux system. This gives it much more attention than just a single distribution and allows it to become more familiar and better user experience for people.
Yes. I was just wondering if you can kind of explain to people what the benefits of it being, you know, a distro agnostic and a package manager agnostic. What are the benefits of that to the end user?
To the individual end user, the real benefits are that there are more developers behind the software, and that leads to more robust and more stable software and more useful software. From the point of view of people managing different distributions and different package management systems, the same piece of software is used throughout, so they don't have to pick up and learn different ways of doing things on each different release. The same parallel can be drawn to things like Network Manager, which presents the same basic interface to dealing with all your different network devices, different brands of Ethernet cards and wireless cards on different distributions. Whereas in, say, the Windows world, each different model and brand of network cards have their own utilities for dealing with these things. And so you never know from one machine to the next which piece of software you have to use to do things. When you create software that is agnostic, you have confidence when you jump from one machine to the next that you know how to accomplish a task, be it installing a piece of software or removing a piece of software or just searching for functionality. With 11, we've made the integration of PackageKit with our desktop even better by being able to detect attempts to use software that doesn't exist on your system and offering you the ability to install the software to use that if it exists. Cases of this would be a missing font. Let's say you opened up a document in AbbeyWord and it requires a certain font to display correctly that you don't have installed. PackageKit can detect this, search the repositories that you have configured for a font, for a package that provides that font, and offer you the ability to install it. Much, much better user experience than just seeing a square block.
Will it help me play MP3s?
In theory, yes. When you try and use a piece of software such as Totem to play a piece of media, we can detect the attempt to use a codec that you don't have installed and search out and try and find and install a package that provides that codec. Fedora doesn't offer any repositories that have packages that provide codecs for things like MP3, but if a user has added their own repositories manually, then PackageKit will be able to search those and find the software that you need.
It just makes it easier to integrate not only stuff that we provide, but any, you know, stuff that certainly any third-party users or third-party repositories want to provide. And it also has practical benefits for people that are, you know, that are not just individual users, but someone who's managing a group of machines and you know, any type of system administration role. Is that correct, too?
Yeah, I mean, it helps the machines pick up and discover which pieces of software they need rather than having to provide every single piece of software possible on an install.
Mm-hmm.
With the underlying policy kit service, administrators can actually grant their users the rights to install extra software in this manner, but without having the rights to remove a whole bunch of software. So it can lead to less administrator headache for the mundane tasks of installing a piece of functionality.
It's pretty cool and pretty practical. So is there anything else that kind of makes you giggle when you think of the new release?
One thing that's pretty close to my heart is the fingerprint reader support. Lots of laptops these days have the ability to do a simple fingerprint read for authentication. And Linux has been able to support this for a number of years, primarily around the ThinkPad laptops. But setting it up has been archaic at best. And you'd have to install a PAM module package, hand edit some PAM files, the pluggable authentication mechanism stuff, and then it just sort of worked, but had a lot of bugs to it. For 11, a few of our developers took on the task of making this a much better integrated setup process. And particularly on the GNOME desktop, it is much easier to create a set of fingerprints for yourself and to enable fingerprint authentication. There is a new checkbox in the authentication configuration utility that allows you to enable fingerprint readers. And in the GNOME About Me interface, there is a box that allows you to subscribe a fingerprint to your user. And once you've done this, simple things like logging in via GDM, clearing the screensaver, or even using sudo in the console will allow you to just swipe your finger to authenticate as opposed to typing in a password. But if your finger's not available, it'll still time out and allow you to put in your password as normal.
Yeah, it's actually that's a feature that I'm looking forward to, because I certainly remember back in the Fedora 6 and 7 days playing with, there was Linux Biometrics was sort of working on the drivers for that stuff, and it was a pain to get it working, and even once we did, even then it didn't work. So I'm glad to see that that's finally come full circle and made its way in, and something, you know, it's simple functionality, but it's really helpful, you know, and cuts down on a lot of the time it takes to do all that, you know, authentication stuff. And it certainly has implications, you know, in all forms of authentication, not just simple, you know, logging into a system, authenticating into a system, but certainly beyond that, might even extend to the internet one day. So I'm
that's
actually a really cool feature. Yeah.
Yep. And then to round out some of the more base level feature set, there's a couple of things that we should talk about. The first is RPM.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have a new upstream RPM release this time. And it's been quite a while since this has been done. A number of years ago, Red Hat and, to a lesser extent, the Fedora project decided that we really needed to kickstart the upstream RPM efforts. Many distributions have been carrying around an older RPM release and just piling patches on top of it to fix bugs or to add functionality. And there hasn't been
a very makes things messy.
Right. There hasn't been a very clear upstream to drive that development. And so the last couple of years, we have thrown a lot of resources at this and have had developers working on cleaning up the existing code base, examining the patches that all these distributions are using, and piling them together into a new upstream release. Along the way, they added some cool features as well. So with Fedora 11, we have RPM 4.7. And the first thing that end users will notice is that there's a significant memory savings in doing operations, as well as much faster file fingerprinting as it's laying down files. And so what users will notice is that RPM is quicker, and quicker is better.
Yep.
To accommodate this, we rebuilt just about every package in Fedora for the 11 release. The things that haven't been rebuilt are things that have build errors and are still being worked on. But for the most part, just about every package has been things in RPM.
Yeah, but most of the system level stuff and you know, libraries and the tool chain and stuff, all that stuff works pretty much, has been rebuilt without issue, right?
That is correct. We've got close to 6,000 source packages in Fedora, and of those 6,000, only about 100 packages have not been rebuilt. A very, very small amount of packages.
Yeah, small percentage, yeah.
Yep. And the one other bit that's not exactly user visible but really important is the default file system. The default file system for Fedora 11 is now ext4. ext4 has been under development for quite a while and was available in Fedora 10 as a preview or as a test file system that you could enable with some special flags and play with. But we felt that it was stable enough to become our default file system for new installs, and we would allow people to migrate from ext3 to ext4, again with a special boot flag. But we feel that it is good to go, and it does bring some speed improvements, some stability improvements, and really is ext3 with a whole bunch of extra stuff added to it. It's not quite as simple as the ext2 to ext3 move. There is some more fundamental changes. So for the best benefit, creating a new file system and doing your install on that is the best way to take advantage of ext4 as opposed to migrating your existing file system to ext4.
And really, it's more of an evolutionary step, and there's been a lot of talk lately about changes to the Linux file system, especially with stuff like BetterFS.
It's not necessarily out of the realm. There are some very interesting file systems out there. BTRFS is really the open implementation of ZFS, which may be more familiar to folks. It really does take a different approach to the file system and is more of an incorporation of both a file system and a volume manager as one piece. And when it's one piece, you can actually do things a little bit easier and a little bit more effectively than you can when you're trying to pile a file system on top of a volume manager, such as LVM. So BTRFS is definitely something that we're looking at in the future as being very interesting to us, and may one day replace the EXT family as the go-to file system. But it's rather immature and in a bit of a ways off. And so we wanted to make the jump to EXT4 now and for the next few releases before we consider a different file system. BTRFS is available in Fedora 11. You can pass a boot time option. I think it's the phrase, "I can't believe it's not BTRFS." And you'll be able to install to a BTRFS file system. Once you've done an install, you can install via, if you didn't during your install, you can add the BTRFS progs package. I do believe it's BTRFS progs, which will allow you to create a BTRFS file system on your own. I personally have got a few volumes on BTRFS for testing, and it's pretty neat. It's not something that has changed my life, but it is something cool to look at in the future.
Yeah, but yet again, it's more, these small kind of proto-evolutionary steps, just kind of like, underneath everything, that's just helping the totality of distribution move forward. So, right. I mean, I think it's pretty cool. It brings with it some really cool stuff from a technical point of view, which I don't know, how interested users are in hearing about them necessarily right now. But, we have stuff up on the wiki, and there's certainly, if you Google EXT4, you can find out tons of information. So, That's pretty cool that, we've been moving forward and we continue to move forward. And with that being said, we're more or less out of time for this edition of the podcast. So, Jesse, I want to thank you for being here, for sharing your thoughts and time with us. And if you have any closing comments, we'd love to hear them.
Well, I'll say in closing that beyond the features I've talked about here, there are many, many more for Fedora 11, and you can find a listing of those at our wiki, which is fedora.org/wiki/releases/11/feature list. It's a long URL, but if you go to our wiki and search for features, you'll quickly find the Fedora 11 feature list.
Yep, and we will be highlighting some of those features in some of the other podcasts that we do leading up to the release and following up the release. So, look forward for more media and more information from us. And, Jesse, I'd like to thank you again for your time. And I guess that's a wrap. Have a good day.
All right, thank you.